Hey there, my name is Bethany Bravery, and I'm the host of the Bringing Her Hope podcast. But even more than that, I want you to know that you are welcome into this conversation, that there is a seat for you at this table. And I can't wait for you to meet each and every one of these amazing women who I know will inspire you to also live out the story that God is calling you to, and to give you hope that He will be faithful to redeem your story as well. We will laugh together for sure, and most definitely cry, but you know what? I get so excited about the thought that together we can grow deeper in love with Jesus, that we can jump with both feet into the adventure He has for us. So get ready. It's going to be a crazy, amazing ride. My guests today are Nikki and Kirk Zweigel. Starting their family in Oklahoma was fun and fulfilling and even purposeful. So leaving their comfortable life to take the next journey in where God called them was this exciting adventure. And then their adventure quickly turned into unfortunate circumstances. They faced illness, marital strain, and financial struggle, leaving them wondering what was next. Thanks so much for being on the show, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Why don't you tell our friends a little bit about you?
Okay, my name is Nikki, and this is my husband, Kirk, and we've been married for 12 years. We have three children and got married in California, moved to Alaska, then moved to Oklahoma, and then landed in Oregon. And we're excited to be here. And it was quite a journey getting here, but we're here and we just love it.
Awesome. And today, guys, we're talking about leaving comfortable and entering into the unknown. I always think about when we picture our lives and picture what we think it's going to look like, and we have all these expectations, and then the script flips. So Nikki and Kirk, why don't you take us on your journey of what that has looked like for y'all?
Yeah, so I guess going a shorter route, so we're not giving like all the minor details, going from Oklahoma, our major flipping of the script was from going from Oklahoma into Oregon. And Oklahoma started out great. That was really where our marriage, even though we did stay in Alaska for a short period of time and then Oklahoma, that Oklahoma was where our marriage was established. Our family unit was established. Our first two kids were born in Oklahoma. Life was really good out there. We went to Bible school out there. I had a job and Nikki was able to stay at home with the kids and raise them in their younger toddler ages. And we were in ministry and life was just excellent, like really great out in Oklahoma. We often joke that we would love to go back to Oklahoma because it was like, it was definitely a fantastic time of our life.
Yeah, welcoming, like just growing in our marriage, welcoming our children. We had just bought a house, doing ministry. I mean, right out of like Bible college, you're really anxious to get into ministry. And so Kirk had a internship at a church that we were doing. We were leading a youth group. It was just everything we could have dreamed of for that time in our life. And I think probably the biggest like missing factor was we were like, what is our grand ministry look like? What is the major purpose He has for us? Like we've set foot into ministry, but now we want to hit the ground running and like go all in and just live this life fully on purpose for God. Like that was our young 20s heart. You know, we wanted our kids to grow up in ministry. And I think in our own little perfect corner of Oklahoma, like that was the one thing that was really kind of like maybe a missing area in our longing and our being. And so we were praying and seeking God, and it's actually a really cool way that the Lord revealed to us to come to Oregon. I had been like seeing it in like every aspect of my life. Like I like on Facebook, I would always see things about Oregon, and I had never been to Oregon. I grew up in California. So being so close, I still had never come to visit or knew anybody that lived out here. And I just knew inside, like, we're supposed to go to Oregon. And so I remember one morning, we were laying in bed and I just looked over at Kirk and I was like, I think I know what our next step is. I think we're supposed to move to Oregon.
Wow.
And he like jumped up. Like, I've been getting Oregon too. So that was kind of, you know, really exciting. And we were happy about that. So we were like, okay, we have something to pray into now. We have a focus that we can ask the Lord about. And what did you want to add?
Yeah, I think we moved to Oklahoma in 2010. And then in like 2012-ish, maybe 2013 was when we got Oregon. And then when I was continuing to pray, I felt like God was specifically saying Eugene, Oregon. And so I told Nikki that around like 2012, 2013, but we were still involved in, I was finishing up Bible school. Nikki had gone out a year earlier than me, so she was done with Bible school. And we were finishing up there, and we were just involved in ministries and stuff. And so we were comfortable with where we were. We had a good life, and everything was working out well. But 2015 was when doors were essentially closing, like the internship was ending. And so it wasn't, I guess I say that because it wasn't just like a spur of the moment thing. It was years of progression. And we had come to this point that we were like, okay, I think that now it's when God is calling us to what God has in store for us. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was what he had in store, but it wasn't what we had in store.
Lipshanger.
Yeah. So 2015, I was pregnant with our third child, and we had a 3-year-old and a 1-year-old. Mm-hmm. And we just felt, you know, that our time in Oklahoma was coming to a close. We had been praying into this for several years. And so we were like, okay, you know, like now we were kind of at like this crossroads where we either continue to set roots in Oklahoma, mm-hmm. or we take a step of faith and trust with very little leading. I mean, we knew Oregon, but we didn't know what all that looked like in Oregon. We knew the longing in our hearts was to help, you know, like we wanted to help homeless people.
Yeah, because that was even before Oregon, because we did one, like I call it a shotgun trip out to Oregon when we came to visit family in California. We had done one trip up to Oregon just to Eugene, because at that point in life, we knew that Eugene was the place. But prior to that, Nikki and I both, we had never been to Oregon. We didn't know anything about Oregon or even Eugene, as naive as that is. We didn't even know about the University of Oregon being in Eugene. Mm-hmm. And in prayer and in life in Oklahoma, we both felt like we had a huge heart for college age students and for homeless people. Mm-hmm. And so when we did that shotgun trip out to Oregon, and I mean, there's a significant amount of homeless people, yeah. in Eugene.
And you see college stuff everywhere. So.
And so it was like, we had confirmations throughout life. And
so then we were like, okay, well, let's go and, you know, plan our next step for Oregon. And we, you know, like Kirk had put in a lot of job applications, and we put our house on the market, and we were just like, okay, let's get going. And the plan was to go out to California for like 2 weeks and just spend time with family, because our whole married life, we had been in a whole different state. And so we were like, we're just going to go and enjoy time with family. And then as you know, you get interviews, you'll make some trips out there to go get interviews, get a place to live, and kind of just take our time enjoying the process. And little did we know that that process is going to go from a 2-week span to an 8-month wow. journey. And so we just packed everything up. Kirk's brother came out and helped him drive a moving truck to put all our stuff in storage in Oregon. And I flew out with our children, and we went to California and stayed out there and enjoyed the first couple of weeks, and there was no call for an interview. I mean, and we were continuing to put in applications, and there was just nothing. It was just like crickets. And so we started to realize, you know, this isn't working the way we planned.
I think Nikki, when we were discussing this and what we would talk about, Nikki was like, what was like the moment in California that you were like, oh no, something's wrong. And I couldn't think of like a specific moment, but I do know that after I'd been in California, because Nikki got there a couple of days sooner for flying, after being there for a couple of weeks and getting no callbacks, it was like, okay, I need to up my game in applications and just put in, I mean, I probably put in hundreds or maybe not hundreds, but over 100 applications. Because at first I was picky in what I wanted. And then with no callbacks and not being able to supply for the family, I was like, anything, give me anything. Yeah. McDonald's, you want me? Nope. Don't want you.
Yeah. And it was difficult because, you know, we were trying to think back to like what all our savings looked like. And we had income coming because we ended up putting our house up for rent instead of selling it because there was no buyers. We had thought, okay, this house is going to sell quick. There was no buyers. Everything just started to unravel very quickly. And we felt like we were losing our grip on what we had so much comfort in before. We were like, this is territory we've never really walked on before as a married couple and with young children.
Yeah.
So we ended up basically living with my parents, unexpectedly to them and to us. And just over that 8 months, we got so attacked. Kirk had gotten what the VA told him was meningitis. We got in a car accident and our car had to be put in the shop for a long time. Just our finances with no job, no income. And then it got to a place where it was like, you know, me being pregnant, I was to a place in my pregnancy where I was like, if we're not going to be in Oregon, I got to get on some kind of insurance here, you know, state insurance, because I've got to take care of my baby. And so we ended up on state insurance, food stamps, pretty much any assistance out there we were on. Yeah. And it was so disheartening. I don't know how else to say it, but feeling like we missed God, feeling like, what's next? Did we make the wrong decision? Is there hope for us? Like, do we even want to go to Oregon? I mean, what is there for us in Oregon? We haven't gotten a job callback. We don't have a place waiting for us to move into. It was just really, really difficult. And I think to kind of fast forward a bit, I think that, we kind of got to a place that we had gotten to in Oklahoma where it was kind of like, we either are setting roots here in California or we're going to Oregon. And I think there was a time for me that I was like, I'm having this baby in California because there's no way I'm moving 8 months pregnant to a new place with no real provision and having this baby. So to me, I was like, okay, we're definitely not going anywhere until October because that was when my due date was. And we did welcome our third child at my parents' house. We were all in one bedroom.
Not at your parents.
Well, not at my parents', but we brought him
home. A family affair.
We brought him home to my parents' house, and we were all five of us and our dog sharing one bedroom. And you know, with the weather change, like Kirk had to drive out to Oregon and get some of our like warm clothes and drive back.
The stuff that was in storage for 2 weeks was now in storage for 6 months at this point.
Yeah. And so, I just remember thinking, you know, and like during that time too, like Kirk and I had a lot of marital strain because he was having his own struggles of providing for the family. And then I was having kind of, I think I went through a place of kind of blaming him because like,
so the truth comes out,
you know, like kind of like, how did you let this happen? You know, because so many times it's like, we know that God is the one that is our covering and takes care of us. But like our husbands are earthly, you know, like our earthly models of that. And so I feel like a lot of it was just kind of like, what happened? Where is this coming from? And, you know, I was being hostile towards him, and I think he was just feeling some type of way. And we actually got into this big thing.
It was by far the lowest point in our marriage. Yeah. It's actually kind of funny. I'll try to make it quick. But I had written Nikki a letter, and it was really sweet because Uriah was four at this point. And I had written a breakup letter. Like, we'd been married for 5 years and I was just done with it. So it's something about Nikki that if someone wants Nikki on their side, they will learn that you want no one other than Nikki, because she is like, I wrote in the letter, probably not the best illustration, but I said in the letter that she's like Hulk. Probably more accurately, She-Hulk, but she is so fierce and such a warrior. Like, she's someone that you want on your side. But like the Hulk in the movies, like, sometimes he doesn't know who he's attacking. And that's what Nikki would do in our marriage, is she would attack me. And it was like, I can't keep doing this. And so I wrote this letter just saying I'm done. And I remember going to the last sentence and just to like sum everything up and say, this marriage is over. And three different times I went to put the pen to paper and I would just start bawling and like heaving, crying, because like, to me, it was over. And my son was 4 years old. And each of those three times I would start crying and he would just come and hug me. And it just, like, as sweet and cute as it was just even more painful, because it's like, I'm giving up not only this, but all of it. And before I gave Nikki the letter, I had taken a picture of it and sent it to my older brother, who I respect his opinion, and her mom, who I respect her opinion. And I was just like, look, you guys, this is what I'm doing. Like, are you going to talk me out of it? And neither of them responded. I was so mad about that. And then Nikki was leaving and I gave her the letter and I said, this is for you to read. Well, you're not here because I don't want to get attacked. And then when she was gone and her mom responded, and her mom was like, this can be good. And I was like, Irene, this is good.
Did you read the last sentence?
I am ending things with your daughter.
Yeah.
And, but I don't, it was a Holy Ghost thing, I guess. It was a Holy Spirit response, because Nikki came home and was like, hey, I'm sorry. I don't even know if you said you're sorry, but she was just like, I don't want this. Like, this is not what's gonna happen. And so
I feel like for me, like, reading that letter, I don't feel like I knew that he was saying like, this is ending. I think I more so took it as like a reflective kind of letter of like, yeah, like, we're attacking each other when we should be a team right now. We shouldn't be coming at each other. Like we started this journey together, and we need to do whatever it takes to finish it together, because he's not going to move on without me. Like, I'm going to jump in the bags and go with it, whether he likes it or not, you know? Yeah. And so I think I needed that. I think I needed to see him kind of express maybe that like breaking moment for him, because when I was having so much of my own turmoil and my own sadness, you know, I was like, I don't even know what he's thinking. I don't even know that I can handle his emotions and mine, you know? And I feel like we just kind of lost the ultimate sight. Yeah. And even looking back though, we see that like the Lord gave us so many little nuggets to keep us in the game. And I think ultimately that is what kept us going, and what ultimately got us to Oregon. But, you know, it's so hard to see it when you are in the middle. It's hard to see that God is still here with me in the midst of it. And I just remember like so many times seeing, like, just driving to church or driving to the grocery store or whatever, I would see that like Oregon sticker on the back of someone's car. And it's just like, I felt like they were little hugs from God saying like, I still know what the plan is. Like, the plan's still going to happen. I'm still here. You just have to trust. And it's hard to trust. So.
Yeah. Since we were there for 8 months, and Nikki hit on it, and we essentially did not want to set roots in California. So it was really hard, like, how we were supplying for ourselves. And every month was a question. We had stuff in storage up in Oregon that we were about to debunk on payments to that and lose everything there. We were getting our house foreclosed on in Oklahoma, and everything was like, every month was, how are we going to do it? And, but there were like little things, like we had never been in a car accident before. And one time towards the end of our time in Oklahoma, a guy like barely tapped the back of our car, like at like 1 mile per hour. And he jumps out and sees that we have Uriah in the back. And he's like, I've got full coverage. You guys do whatever you need to. I'm so sorry. And to me, I was like, you barely did anything, man. Like, what's the big deal? But his insurance, like, gave us all these, took care of us in so many ways. And then even to the point that when we were in California, we both got $1,000 checks, like thousand and some change dollar checks from that accident. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Why did we get this? But it's like small things like that, that, that God was constantly providing for us.
Yeah.
And again, like Nikki said, like for me being the man, like not being able to provide was so damaging to my pride and the man that it's his job. But to have God providing for us was really, I think one of the major, one of the many major lessons that God had for us in store through California.
So then getting to Oklahoma, I mean, to Oregon, I keep saying Oklahoma, I'm sorry. Getting to Oregon, that was fun. Kirk kind of had just been, I think just got fed up and was like, we're going. I'm going to Oregon and I'm going to find a job and I'm going to find a place to live. Because again, we found ourselves at that crossroad though of California or do what we were called to do.
I got fed up like a month into California, but this one was different because we literally, at this point, we had $300 in our bank account.
Yeah.
And there was no seeing anything else outside of that. Yeah. And so it was just like, I had actually I tried telling Nikki, like, let me just go to California or to Oregon. You stay here. You've got your parents that will help you and the kids. Let me go because I can stay in a tent while I get a job and find something to establish us. And then I'll come and get you. And going back to that letter where Nikki's like, no, we're in this together. She was like, nope, that's not.
We can all stay in the tent. We're good.
Yeah. I was like, I don't know that you'll come back and pick me up, man. We're going together.
But even in that, because we had $300 to our name and we were like, Nikki was like, no, we're all going together. But in Nikki's head, which she didn't tell me till later in life, but in her head, she's like, hopefully my parents will talk him out of leaving.
Yeah.
And so we went and told her parents and we didn't account for the fact that we had stayed in their house for 8 months. They were like, yes, you guys go get out.
Go where you feel led.
No, I thought for sure that my parents were going to be like, well, Kirk, like think it out. You have like a 3-month-old son and your other two kids are young. Like it's okay. I kind of thought that they were going to kind of maybe throw us some kind of bone. And I mean, they had given us so much, you know, help up to that point. And so I think, and I'm thankful for parents that listen to the Holy Spirit, because I know it was hard for my mom to say kind of like, we release you, but she knew, you know, just like she knew with the letter that Kirk had wrote me that like, she knew her daughter, she knew it was going to be good for me. And I think in that same sense, she knew like, I have to let you go. I have to trust that the Lord has you, you know? And so she kind of, I just remember us talking to her and I was like, I know my mom's going to say no. I know my dad's going to say no. Like they're not going to let us do this. Yeah. And I just remember my mom like looking down and shaking her head. And she's like, okay, well, you know, you got to follow the Lord or something like that. And I was just like, no, you can't. What is happening?
And then going to my parents, because we needed help bringing everything up to Oregon. And I went to my dad and I thought the same thing, because growing up, my dad was huge on don't put the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
And so I was like, don't even worry about it. My dad's gonna be like, nope, you're putting the cart before the horse. You know, we'll figure something else out. And so I go and tell him, and he's like, all right, when are we leaving? And I'm like, oh, no.
So January 17th,
2016,
we loaded up our car with everything we've accumulated, you know, in California with a brand new baby. We had our three kids, our dog, no place to call home waiting for us. Kirk did have a cousin out here that we, through the process of coming out to visit, we learned that he had a cousin out here. And so that was the only family we knew. And we drove out here with my father-in-law under the impression that we at least had a place to stay, and we didn't, but he kind of followed us out, and we met up with Kirk's cousin and had our first dinner out here. And then we went and stayed in a Motel 6 for the first three nights. And it was, it's a part of town that's still.
Yeah. That part of town, we'll drive past it and just like our spiritual drama would be like, look at this dark, dark part of town.
I mean, our dog was like sleeping right by the door, like guarding the door, because she was just like, what are you guys doing? You know? And I remember like my kids thought it was so fun, like staying in a hotel, and we get, you know, cereal from the gas station that was right next to it. And I'm sitting there like trying to hold back tears as I'm like pouring them cereal from a little milk container, a little box of cereal in this like disposable bowl, and just thinking, what are we doing? What are we doing? This is scary, but it was also like, I had this excitement too. So I'm like, we're finally in Oregon though. So like, what's going to happen? What's
Yeah. Now that we've fully obeyed God and pushed our way into Oregon, God's just going to, there's going to be rainbows over everything that we're supposed to go and do, and everything's going to be perfect. And no, still no rainbows. Even with all the rain, still no rainbows. I think that one of the biggest provisions, and I think that for listeners, like this was one of the biggest things for me, because even in California and the ways that God provided, there was still, we were surrounded by family. So it's like, even if something happened, like there's still family there. Mm-hmm. And so we stayed 3 days in the Motel 6. We had $0 in the bank account because we used it staying there. And my cousin that we had learned lived in Oregon, he housed us. It was ironic that we had a heart for homeless, and Nikki says we were homeless in coming out.
Yeah. Gotta walk through what you're going to do ministry, huh?
Yeah.
And our cousin let us stay in their RV. They had an RV. They let us stay in there. And he had told us that it was an easy decision, because when he was younger and his mom was in California, my parents let them stay at their house for a period of time. And I think to me, that was one of the biggest triggers. It was like, God's provision is so outside of you that even when I'm away from family, and decades prior, God was working things out in ways that only he can. And so I think that that's one of my biggest takeaways.
Yeah. And yeah, so we stayed there for
probably 5 days.
I think it was 2 weeks.
2 weeks, yeah.
We stayed there for about 2 weeks, and the Lord made a way for us to be gifted a amount of money that could get us into a rental. Wow. And held us over. I mean, sustained us. And I remember looking online for houses to rent, and I found the house that we're currently in, and I was like, oh man, I mean, after not having your own home and not have your kids having the stability of their own home, I was like, Lord, because we had like a deposit for an apartment. We had put a deposit down, and they were like, well, we need an answer like before the weekend's up. And I'm like, I really want this house because we have a dog and we need a yard, and I want my kids to be able to play and all this stuff. And, the Lord just, we don't even know. I can't, I'm not even going to try to explain because I don't know, but with our messed up credit and
2015 murdered our credit. We had terrible credit. This apartment said that we could be there, but we need an answer by the weekend. And that Friday morning, it was so fast too, because it was Thursday. We came and looked at this house, and
there was multiple people here to look at it. It wasn't just us.
Yeah. There was another car that was waiting to see it after us. And so we were like, look, we'll put in the application before we see it.
And like, that in and of itself was a faith thing, because I remember when we were driving down the street, one of the main streets that we live off of, I remember the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, you're going to live here. And I looked over and it was just an empty field. And I was like, no, I don't want to be homeless. You know, I was like, please no. And then when I found this house, like in the middle of the night online, I felt like the Lord was like, if you want this house, put your faith there. And I'm like, haven't we given enough faith? Like, yeah. But the interesting thing was that, like, we had just enough money to get to put a deposit down and pay first and last month's rent. Mm-hmm. But you have to pay for each application fee for each adult and then a dog deposit. And so it was like, just putting in an application for the house was a faith step, because it was literal money coming out of our account that, like, we didn't have a surplus of. So I did that, and just, he made a way. It was wild. And the very cool thing is that where we live, two streets back behind us is where that field is, mm-hmm. that he told me, you're going to live here. And I didn't even know, I didn't even connect those dots at first, because I was so new to the area. And so, like, when we do, like, family walks and I see that little field, I'm like, the Lord's promises, man. Like, when he says something, it's going to be done.
It's out of your line of sight, but it's in the bird's eye view.
Yes. It's quite a journey to get
the apartment. The apartment had said, we need an answer by the weekend. And so the people at the house, we put in the application Thursday. Friday morning, they called at like 8 o'clock in the morning, let's say. And we're like, hey, everything looks good. We're going to process this application and run your credit, and we'll get back to you Monday. And I was like, we need a place to stay, and the apartment needs an answer by the weekend. Like, is there any way you guys can expedite this? And the lady's like, yeah, let me try to run your credit and let me call you back. And she hangs up, and Nikki's like, what? And I'm like, we're not getting that house. They're going to run the credit and see. And the lady calls back like 10, 15 minutes later and is like, yeah, you guys are good. You can come pick up the keys to the house. Gosh. And it was like, no.
Until we had those keys in our hands.
Literally, like, it was like clenching the steering wheel, driving to the place, like,
something's going to come up and they're going to tell us this isn't happening. Like,
yeah,
it just felt too good to be true.
I was like, they didn't run the credit. It was too quick to run the credit. They're going to run it while we're driving there. They're going to see that we're not, I had not even started at this job. I had a job not lined up, but I had not even started at this job. So like, there was nothing. And, until we signed the papers and we put our name and had the key, and we just ran out of the place.
But I mean, there's moments that we can laugh at now, but like, it was a very tough journey. And I mean, we were talking about this podcast and what we wanted to share. And we realized that, like, we hadn't even really dove into all of these details since it happened. I think just because there's like a place in our hearts where we kind of buried it away, you know, and now what, in our seventh year out here, it was kind of like, well, we need to have this like redemption, this awesome redemption story to share, you know? And I was like, I told Kirk, I think just this morning, I was like, it's not even that I want to have this grand redemption story to share, because I feel like people need to know about that middle ground where, like, you know, a lot of times we hear someone's journey of how it was so hard, and then we see them on the outside. But like, so many times we're living in the middle, and that requires a lot of trust, a lot of faith. And it sounds so beautiful coming out of your mouth to say that, but like, living through it, you do have a lot of struggle. You do have a lot of moments where you're like, are you here, God? Like, do you see this? Like, does your promise still stand? And he took us through this physical journey from 2015 to 2016. But what he's been doing since we've set foot in Oregon is working on a spiritual journey in me. I think for so many years, even after we set foot in Oregon, I was like, our ministry has to look like this. And it, and this thing was a box that I put us in. I put our ministry in. I put our calling in. And for so many years, just being a stay-at-home mom, I'm like, how am I impacting anybody? I'm in a new place by myself with my kids, and they're the only thing that I have, you know, and I'm not impacting anybody. I'm not making any change. Why did we move out here? You know, you just have these, like, these moments of doubt. But it's like, the Lord has taught me, especially in the last, like, year and a half, that, like, don't hold anything with a clenched fist. Mm-hmm. If he gives you a calling or a promise, have it just ready for him to do whatever he wants to do out of it. And don't make ideas of how it has to look and ways that it has to happen, because his ways are just so far beyond, you know, like we said about us with the house, like with the key, even though he made a way, we were still like, no, this isn't right. This isn't right. Something's wrong. They're going to take it from us. And it's like, they didn't, because the Lord made a way for us. And we still don't know how that worked out, but he did it. And he just always has a way of doing that. And he's really teaching me that. And it's just a beautiful place to get to.
Well, and I think too, just watching you guys made choices along the way, choices to posture yourselves with, okay, Lord, whatever this looks like, we're going to choose this marriage, whatever this looks like, we're going to move to California, whatever this looks like. And that's what God is asking us as Christians. Are we willing?
Yeah.
He doesn't ask us to figure it out, to show up in a certain way. He just wants to know if we're willing to take the ride. And you guys have proven that you're continuing to willing to take the ride. Let's pivot a little bit and ask some questions from the perspective of a couple who they feel like there is a call on their life, but they feel like they are in the waiting. So Nikki, I want you to speak to them and what you would say, and then Kirk, you as well.
I would say the Lord is with you. And if you're willing to listen, he will show you ways. And it may not always be this, like a very clear, distinctive thing, because many times we were at a crossroads where I literally just had to listen to the piece that was telling me, like this house, you know, like, I'm going to put my money here and then I won't have money for another option. Like, all my eggs are in this basket. And it was following that piece. I remember even telling Kirk, like, I don't know what to do here. I don't know. I feel like we're supposed to do this. And he said, if you feel like you're supposed to do it, then we're going to be obedient and do it. And so I would just say, lean into the Holy Spirit and ask for direction, and just trust what you know inside, you know, like that still small voice inside it. It's very hard to listen to when there's a lot of distraction. There's a lot of doubt. There's circumstances facing you down. But if you can just lean into that still small voice, he will not steer you wrong.
It's good.
Yeah, I would say that there's got to be a couple of core. I think that what would be helpful in the waiting period is just a couple core things of just knowing that God is victorious no matter what. Like, as you read the Bible, there's a lot of failures in the Israelites' story throughout the Bible, but God is still victorious. And Jesus has always been God's redemption plan. And so knowing that God's victorious, his redemption plan isn't coming the way that we expect it, but it is coming. And knowing that you're his child, he's not going to leave his child to be eaten by wolves or to suffer some horrible, unredeemable way. Like, he's going to be there for you.
That's good. Let's speak to the couple who they are struggling. They're struggling in their marriage. Maybe there's something that has happened with a child or a job or whatever it is. How do they continue to choose each other?
You go back to your vows, I think, is really what it is. I mean, go back to who you fell in love with and realize that, like, they are not the enemy. Because through our journey, that's what I felt like. I think a part of me was like, I feel like this is his fault. Like, he missed it. He didn't hear God. Maybe he should have made us stay, you know, but like, once you go down that path,
yeah,
the enemy is sure to throw another thought, accusing thought, you know, of, he's just never short of throwing those thoughts. So if you allow yourself to dwell on it, that's what's going to come of it. And so I feel like to dwell on the things you love about them. I still do that to this day. Like if I'm struggling, I'm like, Kirk is a good father. Kirk is an amazing husband. You know, it is like, I have to physically say it out loud because I don't want to allow room for those thoughts. And I mean, that's why the Bible tells us to dwell, to think on good things, because the enemy is sure to have a stack of things to add to the list of negative if you allow yourself to dwell on that. So sometimes it really is going back to the person you fell in love with and the reasons you love them, even if they seem so tiny. But if you just start speaking those and remembering those and dwelling on those, you're going to find the fight for your marriage.
Yeah, I would agree. I feel like that's so powerful. It reminded me of my mom told me a story when she had gone to her pastor years and years back and said that she did not love my dad anymore. And she was just done with it. And the pastor had told her, yes, you do. I mean, he said it much more eloquently, but he was saying, if you take away the kids, if you take away the stresses, if you take away the finances, if you take away the jobs, do you still love that person that you said, I do too? And my mom was like, yeah, I do. And he said, you love him. It's these things that are contending against it. And so I would add to it and say, rather than, like when I had written that letter to Nikki, rather than contending against each other, come together and contend against those things that are robbing that love.
That's really good. And either one of you can speak to this question of what if someone is thinking, you know, there's this call on my life or my husband and I's life, but have we missed it? How did you grapple with that question of have we missed it, or do we need to wait longer, or do we need to go a different direction? What do you do with that question of have I missed it?
I will say you have not missed it. Mm-hmm. I will say that God's eye is always upon you, that you are always watched over, that God is always with you. He is always for you, no matter what lies try to creep into your head, that God sees you. You cannot miss God. If he's the one that created the heavens and the earth and you're on his earth, he sees you. He knows you. He had your life planned out, and just keep going. Keep your eyes set on him. If you can, try to eliminate any ideas of pride that might be helpful in the fight, but God sees you. You have not missed him, and he's not given up on you.
I have to add in, I'm so sorry. Just like a quick thing is passion. If you still feel that longing and that passion, even if you lack the drive, but you have that passion that was placed in you by God himself. Yeah. And you have it for a reason, even if it seems so buried, like there is there for a reason. And as long as that's there, you haven't missed it.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's so good. Well, and I love what he did with you guys. He didn't give you the entire blueprint. He gave you manna for each day. I mean, really, he wants to walk with us in this journey. We so often want all the steps, but he's like, hey, I want to walk with you. I'm on a journey with you. So this is kind of how I get you to do that, so you don't run. One last question for each of you. How has your perspective changed from going too comfortable to the unknown and walking with Jesus?
My perspective is, I guess I don't always walk in this perspective, but I kind of see it as a privilege that he does trust us with that little bit. And sometimes if we feel like maybe we got caught up in doubt or complaining, he's faithful to throw it out again and say, you may not know it all, but go back to this place of what I brought you out of. And it was just like you're saying, that daily manna. And so like to me, to when I do take a step back and I recognize I'm in the middle of this unknown place, I don't know what's waiting for me on the other side. I just go back. I just have this like fresh perspective of like, the Lord has given me an opportunity to align myself to Him and have step out in faith and trust. And it's messy a lot of times, but He's giving me that opportunity, and not only just the opportunity, but He's giving me the strength to do it when I choose to step into alignment with that.
I think our life was so good up until our attempted move to Oregon, that my relationship with God was that God is perfect. And so when I would come to God, I would need the circumstances perfect. I would need the lighting right. I would need no distractions. My coffee needs to be 185 degrees. And this is how I come to God. And now my perspective has changed, where I come to God in the messiest of situations and in the most uncomfortable of times and the most difficult of times. And I know that He's there with me now because of what California taught us.
Well, guys, I know that our viewers and our listeners are going to want to connect with you guys. So how can they do that?
We are on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook is just our names, Kirk Zweigel, Nikki Zweigel, and Instagram, I am the handle Step Into Her, and Kirk is just Kirk Zweigel over there.
Perfect. I'm not super active on social media, but Nikki actually has a really big passion for speaking into women's lives. And so that's what Stepping Into Her is. Yeah.
She does an incredible job. I follow that girl and she does incredible. So for you, those of you that are driving and you're like, wait a minute, I didn't get that. No problem. We've got you covered. They're all in the show notes. Well, Nikki and Kirk, thank you so much just for your transparency, your willingness to let us journey with you through from the comfort to the unknown. So thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you.
Absolutely.
I loved my conversation today with Nikki and Kirk. Leaving comfortable and entering into the unknown. Man, I think we've all had this perspective, especially even as young kids, of what our life was supposed to look like. And then when that doesn't happen, or when the script gets flipped like it did for Nikki and Kirk, we get a choice, guys. We get this choice to whether we choose a God who is faithful, who knows the beginning from the end, to trust Him on the adventure that He has for us, or whether we just stay in the comfortable. I hope today that you'll see that there is purpose in being stretched. There is purpose in that type of faith where we have this desperate dependence upon Jesus, like Kirk and Nikki had, where they had to trust Him for food. They had to trust Him for a job. They had to trust Him for the next step, that God was faithful to give them their manna, and He will be faithful to you as well. So what is something that maybe you are being stretched in? What area is God calling you out of the comfortable and into the unknown? I just want to encourage you to spend some time with Him today. Press in and allow Him to guide and direct your steps. Well, I can't wait to share another episode of the Bringing Her Hope podcast. But until then, you keep living those brave stories for Jesus. I wanted to take a moment to give a shout out to our sponsor of the Bringing Her Hope podcast, Friends of Hope. Friends of Hope is a nonprofit ministry dedicated to the support of Christian radio, Christian events, new media, and activities that share the good news of Jesus Christ. So thanks again, Friends of Hope, for sponsoring the Bringing Her Hope podcast so we can continue to share more brave and beautiful stories of God's redemption.